Hey everyone, I wanted to tell you about Blue Wire Hustle, a brand new program where you can host your very own podcast here at Blue Wire. Hustle was created to give everyone the opportunity to take your podcast to the next level. Or if you want to host a podcast and just don't know where to start, Hustle is the perfect place for you. As part of the program, you'll receive personal cover art, Q&As with Blue Wire's top podcasters, access to our community Discord, and an e-learning course full of tips and tricks. And on top of all that, we'll get you your show pushed out to Apple, Spotify, Google, Stitcher, and all other listening platforms. And the best part is you can get all of this for only $15 a month, the same rate as any other hosting site would charge just for the initial setup. So whether you're starting from scratch or have an existing show that you want to grow, Hustle is an open door to leveling up your sports experience. Acceptance into the program is limited, so get your application in today. To apply, go to bwhustle.com/join. Check out the description box for this episode to find out more. That is bwhustle.com/join.
Andy loses. Can you hear me, my friend?
Can I hear anything? I feel like I'm on a, I feel like, you know, when you're flying and you're like, you're going up, turbulence. That's how I feel at all times. Right now. I'm trying to like my jaw is wired shut.
All right, let's back this up real quick before we get started here. Okay. One, the Warriors just had their first 3-game winning streak of the season. I thought the Warriors were going to be the first team of all time to never win 3 or lose 3 in a row. So first 3-game winning streak might as well be the 96 Bulls. Warriors back. But more important, Andy Liu got his wisdom teeth pulled less than 12 hours ago, and he's trying to podcast right now. Like, this is the flu game on the next level. Andy, I appreciate you coming on. I know you can't stay the whole time because – generally health and biology doesn't work that way, but my man is trying to pod through it with having 4 wisdom teeth pulled in the last 12 hours.
All right, you know, the funny story, Sam, shouts to you, because I texted you last night like, hey Sam, I took tomorrow at work off, but do you think I could do like a 1 p.m meeting? And you literally texted back like, what the fuck are you talking about? There's absolutely no chance. Literally got back home this morning and I woke up from a nap and my mouth is bleeding. And I'm like, yeah, I don't think I would have made that. I don't think that would have made that meeting. But I couldn't resist after watching the Warriors' performance. Are you kidding me? It's one of those things where I think Draymond Green just conjuring up bullshit narratives to make himself play harder. Honestly, respect it. If that's what makes the Warriors, if that's what makes them play better.
Are you relating you potting after getting your wisdom teeth pulled to Draymond making up fake narratives about why he's washed to throw? What do you have? 19 assists. Oh, you know he's mad he didn't get 20.
Do you see him hunting that for like 2 minutes? Actually, you make a point that it's actually more accurate to say he's clutch. Like, this is clutch. This is straight up. This dude created a bullshit narrative that, I don't know, like, whatever. I'm surprised he didn't come out where I should have came on this podcast when it cast. Like, he just made some shit up. Now he's all angry at whatever, and he plays well. So, I can't be mad, Sam. You play fantastic.
Hey, whatever gets you going. Hey, now we got an extra host here. We got Aaron Larsoul. Aaron, what's up, my man? Aaron, you there? Did I lose you? 34 jewels. Come on, man. 34 jewels. I don't know what these jewels are on the app. I'm going to be honest with you. They look like they're important.
Can I give them to people? Can people? Oh, look at that. Some people can applaud us. Like, oh, look, me and you have 6. I got to get. Somebody's got to give me more. I got to get a. Well, while Aaron gets ready, we can keep going, Sam. While Aaron,
let's get your takes before.
Sam, do you see the? Are you guys watching the post game right now? It looks like Sam's dad. You got to watch the post game, the CSN post game. I legit thought it was. Oh, that's fantastic.
Oh, what did my dad do?
Oh, you're not watching the post game. You know how they have the fans ask the players a question.
Oh, yeah. I know what you're saying. All right, let's get on topic here real quick. So let's start. Let's let's get through the main topics of the show, which are, all right, we got to start here. Draymond Green, game of the season. Is this a shut the fuck up, criticizing me type of game from Draymond? Or was this more of a everything aligned for him kind of game?
This is not, definitely not a shut. Like, if he does this on Sunday against the Lakers, like, I'm in. You know what I mean? If he goes in that Lakers game and he pulls this and he plays this well and they beat the Lakers, because you know Steph is probably going
to. Hey, if Kelly Oubre gets 20 points on backdoor cuts on the Lakers, you know, that's a different issue. But
I mean, what do you think? I think this is kind of like, this is, look, he played, he shot more in the first, like, he was kind of what he was. But that, they just showed, like, kind of finishing. He had 11 points today. And he finished a couple times. He made a three. He had a couple finished down the lane that looked like he was actually trying to shoot it instead of last game when he was looked like he was trying to pass and accidentally went in. And he played a team that actually Charlotte's pretty good defensively, but today it was just they were a joke.
Yeah, and I just think we gotta get to the fundamental Draymond point here, which is the dude needs a little motivation to get going, right? Like, at his core, I think he was more excited to get tonight off because of how the last Charlotte game ended, where he gets ejected at the end and they lose. And, like, I mean, that was probably Draymond at his worst, right? Like, he cost the team the game. He even admitted he cost the team the game. All that fun. And now we're... You know, now it's kind of like a, you know, I need to redeem myself type of game. And that's kind of Draymond at his core, right? Like, he shows up when he needs to. He needs stakes in a game. Everyone always says he needs stakes in a game. This is one way you get stakes in a game when you're trying to prove everyone wrong and you're trying to say, you know, I had an off night, but I'm not that bad.
Yeah, that's perfect. The thing is, he acts like he's the most confident or the smartest guy. I think Ad Wright was on the locker room last game. He was talking about how smart he is. And I'm like, how confident he is and how he can score. And I'm just like, that's not true, because he's out there not scoring. And it's because he's not confident shooting the ball. But he's confident, though, when he's motivated, right? Like, when he's actually motivated out there, like you're saying, and there's something at stake, which in this game, what was at stake was his, like, his, I don't know, like,
it was a little redemption for the last Charlotte game. Yeah, they played Charlotte 6 days ago. He obviously had, it was a terrible ending to the game. He took the blame for everything. This was a lot of, hey, my bad for the last one, but just remember, I'm still that good type of game.
Yep. Aaron, can you, are you good? Let's see if he's on.
Oh yeah, Aaron. Let's get it, boys. And by the way, Andy, can we talk? Well, first of all, shouts to you for playing hurt here. I hope you're feeling all right. I hope they gave you the good stuff.
Good.
And can I say how much I enjoy your Hawaiian smiley Avi? I don't know what uniform that is. That smiley.
Oh, that's the Santa Cruz alternates
for like, is that their city or their addition or their? Their instinct or whatever. Yeah. Okay.
They're hippie. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's what they need to have at the boardwalk there.
Well, what they need to do is they need to start Alan Smiley Geach at the point over Brad Wanamaker. So I can, at least if I'm going to have a bench unit, that's terrible, at least make it entertaining. So
Andy, are you mixing anything with the Vikes? Are you sipping on anything?
I'm trying not to. So far, no. You know, like, I've done the last time I did that was with, like, Zannies and alcohol, and then you just, like, black out and don't remember a thing. So I'm not sure how I want to go down that.
Not what you want after the win, huh?
Should I tell Tim to edit this out of the pot? No.
It's legal. It's legal. It's not a legal drug. Legal drug.
Yeah, he's got a prescription.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll see. Just a bunch of water. But anyway, I'm about to appreciate you, Aaron, for hopping on. I'm about to get out of here and grab some sleep. But last thing, Sam and Aaron and everyone else, fuck Brad Wanamaker.
Okay, that was succinct.
We'll leave it there. All right, Aaron, what's up, my man?
How are you, brother? Glad to be here, and let's talk some hoops and interact with all the Light Years listeners on Locker Room. I'm ready to go. Let's get it.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's. Oh wow, we got some awesome background noise going on. what I was going to ask you is, let's start with. All right, we were talking Draymond right now. What is your take on Draymond in this game? Because we got the motivated playoff Draymond tonight, in my opinion.
Yeah, so my thing on Draymond, I guess, is if Draymond, so Draymond obviously was trying to make a point, and Draymond's a guy that feeds off of motivation, off of slights, and how he took it upon himself how the game in Charlotte, he felt responsible for the game in Charlotte, how that ended. But I guess my question for Draymond is, and for lots of guys that need motivation and have to get imagined motivation and whatever, is why not always? Draymond came out, obviously was great in the first quarter. I think he, you know, had like 8, 7, and 7 in the first quarter.
Right.
I guess, you know, some of my question for Draymond is, if you can do this, why not always? My big concern with Draymond, look, Draymond is still an effective player. He showed defensively, you know, the Warriors are a good defensive team for a couple of reasons. One of those is Draymond. But offensively, you and I have talked a lot about his hesitancy to shoot and what that means.
And I mean, that's literally been my biggest issue. Like, I don't expect Draymond to shoot 40% from three. I just expect him to take more than two shots a game.
So I think the big issue is not even so much that it bogs down the offense or it kills the spacing when Draymond won't shoot. Even if he's going to shoot 30% from three, I think you have to get him up there. My issue with him not shooting the ball is that it makes it what he really does well is orchestrate the offense and pass. And if he is unwilling to shoot, if it's 4-on-5 all the time, it hinders his ability to pass the ball. And you can see it because he leads the NBA in turnover percentage by a wide margin. So I think he needs to be willing to just shoot the ball, even if he doesn't think it's going to go in, just so people have to pay attention to him doing so. So I just wonder why. I mean, he was fantastic tonight. He was the best player on the floor by a wide margin. But I wonder how good he can be if he's just not willing to shoot.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my thing the whole way through, too, is like, okay, when he plays like this, I have zero hesitations about him. But it's few and far between, and the whole just trust me to turn up when it matters thing. Sure, but it's worrisome when you go like 3 weeks without making a shot, pretty much, right? So that's kind of where I'm at with Draymond. Should we open this to some questions right now, and then we keep moving?
Absolutely, let's get it. I want to talk to the Warrior fans. Let's get it.
Let's go. Let's see. We're going in order. Oh, we're starting with Janelle. Janelle, what is up?
What's going on, Sam? How you doing?
Good. What you got for us?
My thing with Draymond, and I've been asking this to myself and to some of my people on the timeline, why is he so hesitant to shoot? Why has he lost the confidence? No one has bothered to get to the root of it. You know what I mean? And it just seems like he's been confident more in taking it to the basket. He could have been done this.
Yeah, of course. I mean, I think that's I appreciate the question. That's a great question. I think that's actually the most fundamental question. It's like, you know, every time we see Draymond play at this level, we're like, why is this once every 20 games? Why can't it be once every other game, or, you know, on a regular basis? Like, what is it that is preventing him from getting to that level? I'm going to defer to Aaron here. I don't know if you have a theory on this, but I do.
First of all, shout out to Janelle for the A's hat and Abby. Let's go Oakland. I do have a theory. A couple years ago, so confidence is a big thing for outside shooting. Even when you don't when Steph shoots the ball, even if he's missed 10 in a row, he's going to keep shooting because we think the next one is going in. And I think Draymond was a guy that had that confidence. He shot 38% in 15-16 from three. And then he's had these lingering shoulder issues. And so I think that even once he has recovered from those physically, I think that affected his shot. And once he turned into a 33% shooter and then a 30% shooter,
I'll take 33 right now.
Yeah. But and then a 25% shooter, I think that I think he's confident in his shot, because once his shoulder injury kind of messed with everything. And look, there were all those, and I shout out Warriors World. I think he was the first one to do it. But Draymond looks like he's shooting with a backpack on with a bunch of bricks loaded in it every time he shoots the ball, right? So, but once that confidence goes, like, it's tough to get that back. If you have the track record of Kelly Oubre, who was terrible to begin the year, but he's been 35, 36% for his entire life, like, it's there. But Draymond wasn't that guy. And if you're one of those guys that's kind of a fringe shooter anyway, and your confidence goes, like, I think it's a complete mental thing, you know, like Chuck Knobloch can't throw the ball from second base or whatever. Like,
right.
Once that gets in your head, like, that is,
man, I'm trying to figure out my golf swing, and yes, the yips are real.
Yeah, and like, I don't like. You and I talked about this, but you've talked about it on your show. I listen to your show a lot. Like, you talked about it, like, this is probably not coming back for Draymond. So, like, even before the year, right? Like, was it fair to expect hopefully like 32-33%? Maybe, but like, I think everybody here, everybody in the room, Warriors fans, like, it's not coming back. Draymond's done. This is what Draymond is as an offensive player now. Like, it's done.
Yeah, okay, so my whole thing is I was just hoping for 33% and confidence. Like, at this point, I think we all agree the year he shot 39% was the outlier year. Like, that's not who he is. I've watched him shoot the ball before that and after that, and, like, he was really in a groove, but he's not that good a shooter. And that's fine. He does a lot of other things. I'm just looking for him to shoot it with some confidence. So
I agree with, so, and I think that's a thing. I think that's very valuable, right? Like, I worked for the Lakers for a while, and I used to always say that there is value, because Lonzo, when he came in, was a terrible three-point shooter. It was funky. The delivery was funky. But there is value in just being willing to shoot. And you see it with LaMelo, right? Like, LaMelo is an ordinary three-point shooter. But the fact that he is just willing to shoot them makes defenses at least go, like, we should kind of pay attention.
And there's no hesitation. That's the thing. LaMelo,
if you're unwilling to shoot it, the spacing just dies. Like, you can't stand out there or the spacing dies.
I think about someone like Corey Brewer, who's a disgusting shooter. But the man, if he got the ball past him in the corner, it was going up. And guys close on him because it's instinct. When you see the shot go up, you close. And, you know, if you do the Draymond thing, which is usually get the ball, scan the floor, think about it, it gives defenders time to be like, you know, go ahead, shoot that. I'm gonna move to the secondary third defender I should be at. You know, so that's kind of, but it's fine if Draymond's willing to at least take the shot here and there.
Right.
The issue I have is, like, Draymond got into some. I mean, we all saw the stats where he was setting records for assists to shot attempts, like, in a negative way. It's like, no one has ever averaged this many assists without ever taking a shot. So, I don't think that's sustainable, to be honest. Like, that style of play is not.
It is not. And but so the other thing is, so guys like Draymond and even Ben Simmons, guys that are like reluctant shooters, if they play, you know, 15 feet off of you at the top of the key, there are counters that can be used. And Draymond, my frustration with Draymond and Kerr is that they will only go to those counters sometimes, right? Like, if nobody is guarding you, if somebody is drifting, if you're at the top of the key or the three-point line and somebody, whoever's guarding you, is in the paint, you can come set a screen for somebody, because it takes so long for whoever is guarding you to get up to the screen. The guy you're screening for, in this case, Steph, if you do a dribble handoff, can be effective. But in my opinion, the Warriors are too focused on Draymond as just standing at the top of the key and orchestrating.
Right.
As opposed to using that some, because Draymond is a really good passer, but it clogs up. It can get congested. So I would like to see the Warriors kind of counter some with Draymond setting more screens when he is not being guarded because it's an action that can take advantage of those coverages.
I agree with you. All right, we keep it moving. Oh shit, we got.
Uh oh.
Oh wait, is this Tommy from the last podcast? I heard you were talking about his picture here.
Yes. Yeah. Tommy's in the middle of a frat party right now.
Yeah, the pre COVID picture.
No, I'm not.
The picture definitely looks like you were in Palm Springs.
It was a couple years ago, but I have actually been. I played golf today. I've been drinking since like noon, so this might get a little bit crazy.
That a boy.
See where it goes, but.
Oh, to the name Tamela?
No, not LaMelo. We're not going to talk about LaMelo. But I feel like Draymond was pretty good tonight. Can we at least give him a little bit of credit for that?
Oh, absolutely.
Pretty good. Draymond was the best player on the floor by a wide margin.
Thank you. Okay. As long as we acknowledge that. And then also, both of you guys are very hard on Kerr. This Warriors team is now guarding the basketball on the perimeter at the rim. At a pretty high level. Can we give Kerr a little bit of credit too? Like, the guy has his warts. He's very stubborn. He doesn't want to adjust. But the things that he's good at, he is very good at. Like, he taught this team how to play defense. With a lot of guys who don't really know how to guard off the ball. But they've figured it out. They've been the number one defense in the league the last 15 games. He's done an excellent job with this team defensively.
I agree with you. Fine. I will start first. I will take my medicine first. Steve Kerr does deserve credit for figuring out a scheme here and getting the team to defend as a unit. At this point, they are, I want to say they're fourth. They might be third in the NBA now, defensive rating. I have my skepticisms about their defensive ceiling, but any way you slice it, they're maximizing who they are defensively. Like, anything beyond this is, I mean, all right. So Anthony Davis can turn up defensively higher than Kelly Oubre. Like, there's no coach who can fix that, right? So I think Steve Kerr deserves credit for all that. And I do agree with you. It's one of his stronger points as a coach. He's stubborn, but with that stubbornness comes whatever his vision is, he's going to optimize it no matter how you put it.
Yeah. Aaron? I mean, look, Tommy, you're not entirely wrong. I think the issues with the Warriors are a process problem.
There we go.
I think the Warriors and Steve Kerr and his stubbornness has not optimized the Warriors. I think the Warriors on balance should be somewhat better than they are. However, you're not wrong. The numbers are what they are, right? Like, you're not wrong. There is not a lot of offensive talent on this team. There's much more defensive talent than there is offensive talent. And Steve Kerr went into the year saying, my goals are to have a top 10 defense and we're going to run. The Warriors are second in pace and, at least coming into tonight, we're fourth in defensive rating. So he has achieved those goals. I have some disagreements about how he's gone about certain things. And I think some things he's still getting wrong, but look, I mean, the results are what they are. And you know, what is Bill Parcells? You are what your record says. Steve Kerr is responsible for it. I don't think he was done any favors in roster construction, but I think he has done a B job with this roster. So yeah, I mean, He gets credit though. The Warriors are like smack dab in the playoff race, and the Kevin Peltons of the world and the 538s of the world said that the Warriors were going to be 11th or 14th in the Western 14th. Conference, and yep. And they're a playoff team. So he gets credit for that.
To be fair, if the process wasn't what it is, and Kerr isn't who he is, this team probably has LaMelo Ball, and it looks a lot different this year. So,
and that gets to my second point, which
it is what it is, but
he's done a good job,
all things considered, I think, because this roster looked awful to start the season and they've really turned it around. So first 3-game winning streak, you got at least got to give him some credit for that.
We do. And this team is, I think this is a point that often gets understated, which is he's not just a coach. He's won 3 rings. He has clout with the front office. So you can't give him credit for the coaching, but then lament him for the roster construction, because he has more input on the roster construction than an average coach. And that's fine, but it is fundamentally part of the conversation.
Absolutely. It's like the LeBron thing. It's like,
yeah, exactly.
Where like he's affecting the front office. So you got to like take the lumps and take the credit at the same time. You can't only accept it when it's good.
No, that's, you're right. You're right. My issue is in my opinion, his stubbornness has cost the Warriors a title already. And 4 or 5 or 6 years later.
In 2016?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I mean, like, we're like the Kumbaya curse stuff. We're playing Festus Ezeli and Anderson Varejão.
Oh, yeah.
Like, real minutes. Like, you just can't. And frankly, I think that he and the front office, and Sam makes this point a lot, it's very difficult to separate him from the front office. But I think he / the front office have taken Steph for granted and just has been like, you know what? Like, we just need guys that will guard because Steph is going to get us to a good offense no matter what. And it's just that isn't true. Like, Steph needs some help. He needs some space. So, and I have an issue with like the kind of, you don't get it both ways, right? Like, are you playing for this year? Are you chasing wins or not? If it's not about this year, then you don't take Wiseman out of the starting lineup. You don't get it both ways. Either it's about this year and trying to win right now, or it isn't. So I think he very specifically, Kerr, is responsible for making those choices and that direction. And if it's going to be about next year and the year after, fine. Then you don't pull Wiseman out of the starting lineup. If it's going to be about this year, fine. Maybe you do. But then you have the messaging is like, you just don't get it both ways. He more than anybody seems to be trying to thread the needle, and you don't get it both ways.
All right, let's take this a different direction then, guys, because we've had this conversation. I want to stick on this game a little bit. LaMelo and Wiseman tonight, okay? Let's start there. I'm gonna let Tommy get off one more take here, and then we're gonna keep moving.
With that jersey, you got to get him one more.
Yeah, I mean, anyone pulling out the Davidson 30 gets 2 to 3 takes.
Who's the old? Well, I don't know if he's at Chase, but back in the Oracle days, who was like the 52-year-old balding white dude that was right behind the scorer's table in the Davidson? Is that like Tommy? Is that your dad or like who?
Jesus, man.
Hey, at least we're not calling you the old balding 52-year-old. Come on, man.
Hey, man, I'm 29, but I am balding. It's fair enough.
Aren't we all? Mm-hmm. Now, let's get back on topic here. All right, so okay. James Wiseman, really rough second quarter. It's hard to watch him across the court from LaMelo Ball and not constantly compare the two, right? Like, LaMelo is clearly the better player today, February 26, 2021. There's no way around that. And I thought LaMelo looked pretty good for most of the night. I mean, he did kind of get destroyed defensively the whole way through, but it's not like James Wiseman is a defensive monster at this point in his career. Where are you guys both at with James Wiseman? And what you're seeing with LaMelo, do you have trepidation? Do you have comfort in their process? Where are you? Let's start with Tommy first, and then we'll move to Aaron.
So somebody called Wiseman in the comments. Somebody called him Big Bambi. And I thought that was like a very appropriate nickname. He'll have these moments where it's like, oh, wow, that's a super strong move in the post. And he makes a hook shot. The spin move is very nice. Oh, my God. Wow. Like, this guy could be amazing. And then for 5 minutes, he just doesn't do anything and he misses up every rotation. Yeah. Yeah. And like, he doesn't, for a couple minutes, he won't do anything right. He'll mess up every rotation. He won't be able to catch the ball. Like, he had probably 5 or 6 drops tonight, at least. And at the end of the day, if you're a big man and you can't catch the ball, how can you affect the game? Like, especially with the team that's in place right now. And you're expected to play off of Steph and Draymond. it's just going to be very tough for you to affect the game. But I also thought LaMelo struggled tonight, honestly. The Warriors' ball pressure really bothered him. And he is 19. He's young. He's skinny. And so he's going to struggle with that type of stuff for a while. But
had the outside shot going, but not much else.
I thought they both played like average to bad. And I thought LaMelo's bad game was better than Wiseman's bad game.
That's fair. All right, Tommy, appreciate you. And keep moving.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I look, LaMelo was better than Big Jim,
who
we've now discovered, who we knew hated that name, but we've got it officially from him. Until he wasn't. He shot the ball well, turned the ball over a bunch, right? Like right at the end of the first half, kind of inbounded the ball to what he thought was Bismack Biyombo for some unknown reason, and Damian Lee got a layup or got a foul and two free throws out of it. I think I figured it out with Wiseman, and you know, I'm like the biggest, whatever. I colonized Wiseman Island. But I think what it is with him, I mean, look, to be fair, he looks like he's playing with like oven mitts on his hands. He can't catch the ball. And that permeates
it just, hear me out on this one. I just think the game's moving too fast for him.
So that's what I think. That's my point. Because he has skill and soft hands, which is why I say it looks like he has oven mitts on, because they're soft. But I agree with you that it's when the game is moving too fast for him, it makes it look like his hands suck. And frankly, his hands suck. So I think what it is, like I wrote down a bunch of notes when I was watching the game, and like he uses his size on offense, but not on defense. And the big problem for him on both sides is when he has to make reads. When he has to make too many reads, like it looks like his brain just locks up, and then everything is a problem, right? If his hands are much better catching lobs, because there's only one thing to do, just catch the lob and dunk. When he has to kind of read where everybody else is around him, he struggles catching the ball. When he is, I don't think the Warriors should put him in drop coverage or even a gap on pick and roll.
Right.
I think he should just switch or blitz or whatever, so that he has one read and just go do that. Be enormous, be quick, be athletic. Because when he gets in a drop coverage or a gap coverage, he kind of has to gauge where everything else is, and then he gets caught in no man's land. And then all these guards can abuse.
And I don't want to pull my full Bill Simmons here, but like just body language, like it's very visible on his face that he's trying too hard. You know,
exactly.
That's part of it. Like, where it's like you just want to figure out how to relax him, because
like offensively, and I think you tweeted this, like offensively, I think the Warriors are doing him a disservice, putting him in positions where he is offensively like a decision maker instead of a play finisher, right? Like I don't love them throwing the ball to him in the mid post, you know, like 16, and then he faces up and he has all these different options and he ends up usually taking like a slow 18-foot jumper. But right. when they throw the ball to him in the post and it's just like there's no decision, it's get the ball and act. It's a quick spin move, a drop step or whatever. Or even when he catches the ball at the 3-point line when there's no thought involved and it's just get this shot up. He looks like that dude. So I think I agree with you. I think a lot of it is just his brain locking up from too much stimuli. So and I think that's the big thing with his hands, with his defense, with everything. So, you know, some of that can probably be, you know, once the game slows down, I think there's good things to say. And I frankly, like LaMelo, to me, shot the ball well. But aside from that, He was pretty good. He got loony once one-on-one. He was a little better one-on-one than I assumed he would be in watching him. But, like, I don't think he was better than Wiseman today.
Fair enough. We're going to keep moving. Max, what you got for us?
Yo, what's up, guys? I got two things. One, over the last month, I think Kelly has been significantly better than Wiggs. And long-term, who do you guys have more confidence in between the two?
Ooh, I love that question. That is okay. So I'm going to give my initial take, which is I do think Steve Kerr deserves credit for generally. I think both of them have kind of maximized who they are with the Warriors. Like they're playing really good defense. They are they make sense with what the Warriors want to do, at least defensively. You know, maybe it's been not as consistent as you want, but you're probably lying to yourself if you think Andrew Wiggins and Kelly Oubre are going to be more consistent than this. So who do I want long-term? I actually think I would want Andrew Wiggins long-term, but then when you start factoring the contracts, it gets a little more complicated. So it's a little trickier that way. Aaron, what do you got?
Yeah, so I think obviously, you know, all of the Minnesota fans would tell you, like, this is who Andrew Wiggins is. And ha ha ha, this is what you get. I think Wiggins has been fine. He started the year, you know, shooting 42% from three, and you're not gonna get that.
Yeah.
That's not gonna be a thing. But what I am kind of fascinated by is actually how well they fit together, defensively, especially. Like offensively, they're both kind of just fine, whatever. But I think
they kind of fill the same role offensively, to be honest.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. I mean, theoretically they do. Like Wiggins was minus a million tonight because he played with the second unit and
yes.
just and the second unit was terrible. But I'm actually kind of fascinated, and I started looking up some numbers. I think there is something about their synergy on defensively. Wiggins is kind of just like the steady, you know, you're going to shoot 6 for 18 against him. And Oubre is just a menace and wild and goes for steals and is all over the place. And I think I haven't fleshed out this theory completely yet, but I think there is something about how, you know, you have one like steady guy and one wild man. And the fact that you can kind of switch those onto different guys on the wings, on to the opposition's two best players. And have options defensively. I think that is one of the reasons that the Warriors defense has been as good as it is, because, you know, like all of the Oubre picking people up 94 feet and, you know, signaling first downs is annoying. And you're like, get this fucking dude away from me. And then you've got Wiggins, who's just kind of like steady and always challenging every shot. There's something to the like, steady and wild that is really working for the Warriors defense.
Do you prefer the first down signal or blowing kisses?
I like blowing kisses better because it usually means Oubre has made like one of his now 32% of his threes on the year.
Nice.
I think that's more meaningful than taking a charge.
Nice. I like it. Okay, we'll keep moving.
What's up, guys?
Jimmy, what's up, man?
Hey, first and foremost, I want to say Fitz was in great form tonight. I don't know if you guys were watching the Warriors broadcast or not, but he was special.
Always.
I thought the most underrated comment of the night was when, like, at some point he's like, one could say this game has actually been fun to watch. I almost lost it. I was laughing so but
Fitz's performance art at this point. I think he's actually aware of the commentary. I think it's so meta that he knows and he's trying.
He has to be in on it by this point. Like, there's no way, right? Like,
yes,
he would be like my press secretary if I was ever elected to office. The spin is insane. but anyway, on some hoop talk, what I was thinking is the second unit is atrocious. They need to do something. I just like don't like. What playmaking options do we have? Like, ideally it's Poole, right? But like, he obviously hasn't been great. Like, what do we do? Do we try and cut Wanamaker and sign like some dude off the street? Do we look at Jay Lynn? Do we just put JTA back there? Which I honestly wouldn't hate either. Like, what do you guys think?
That's a great question. All right, Aaron, I'm going to let you go to this because like,
okay.
If you're a believer, let me preface this. If you're a believer that the Warriors, Clay comes back next year, they're going to keep Oubre. James Wiseman gets a year better, and you're really running back like the full squad roster. The biggest need is literally anyone who can do anything off the dribble for the second unit, because that's not a Wanamaker's job. But like it's a question, the short term or the long term, who can they target with limited resources, right?
Yeah, I mean, It's two different questions, right? There's the question for next year and then the question for the rest of this year. And I think for next year, the answer is the same thing as it was for this year. You just do it better, right? Like you go get a minimum guy. You can have a minimum guy. There are minimum guys out there, you know, DJ Augustine or whatever, but you just pick a better one than Brad Wanamaker. Brad Wanamaker wasn't good in Boston. He's just, Brad Wanamaker is not any good.
You're not getting a lot of pushback from Warrior fans on that one.
Yeah, I mean, he's just, no. Brad Wanamaker's just not, he just isn't good enough. So, I mean, for next year, that is one option. For this year, look, I mean, we've seen Jordan Poole plenty. He's been really good in the G League. He's also turning the ball over, right? Like, there's a reason that Jeremy Lin is not on an NBA roster. However, I think both of those guys are probably should be ahead of Brad Wanamaker in the rotation, even though Brad Wanamaker got his first dunk maybe of his life today. But I think that need is actually somewhat overstated. I agree that the Warriors need a backup point guard. But for the rest of this year, if you can't find anybody, that's kind of the point of having an offensive creator like Andrew Wiggins in the second unit. Like, Andrew Wiggins is not going to play point guard, but he can handle the ball enough that if you have some other threats around him, it kind of works. I just, at this point, I don't know what function Brad Wanamaker serves. I just don't get it. It doesn't make sense to me. He's just, I mean, like, unless you want to bring him in, you know, with a minute left to shoot free throws, I don't understand. I don't get it. So, let me ask you this.
What kind of playmaker would you want it? Let's start with this. Steve's not changing the system. You know what kind of basketball the Warriors want to play. What type of player would you actually be targeting that fits? Because, like, we can all point to, why didn't they trade for Derrick Rose, you know, like a month ago. But, like, I don't think Derrick Rose is a Steve Kerr type of player, for example. So who should
–
and I know what they were trying to do with Brad Wanamaker. Now, he didn't fit the bill, but Brad Wanamaker is very much a system – initiate the offense, cut, and, you know, break an open shot type of point guard. So
sure.
I'm trying to figure out who they should be targeting.
No, but I mean, look, there've been rumors about George Hill, who would absolutely work. But again, like, for when the Warriors haven't had a backup point guard in like 7 years, right? Like they've had wings that, whether it's Sean Livingston or Iguodala or Draymond, they've had guys that have not been small guy traditional point guards that have, you know, kind of handled the ball a bunch on the second unit forever, you know, like back since Barbosa, basically. So I think that model is fine. That you just need enough of those guys. And again, like, for this roster, I would rather have Andrew Wiggins handling the ball than Brad Wanamaker in the second unit at this point. It just doesn't. Brad Wanamaker just is showing you that he, at this point, is not an NBA player. So
yeah,
if you're not going to go, and I understand the difficulties of acquiring somebody, if that's not what's going to happen, if you're not going to go get George Hill, if you're not going to trade Kelly Oubre for Lonzo or whatever, then like, optimize what you have.
That's even on the table.
Do the best you can with what you got.
Yeah. All right, we keep moving. Ricky, what's up, my man?
Oh, what's up? Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
So, you know, Draymond during the post game said that, you know, he says he's in shape and he feels great, but, you know, he gets tired. He says he gets pretty tired pretty quick. And he doesn't think it's conditioning. He thinks it's potentially, you know, COVID lingering effects. So, you know, how concerned should the Warriors be moving forward if he's still feeling those lingering effects?
Appreciate the question, Ricky. I don't even know how to answer that, to be honest with you. Like, obviously, that's a concern. We're in the middle of a pandemic. It's a little dicey. Like, there's no real playbook for, like, it's not an ankle sprain. It's not one of those, like, all right, you just give him 2 weeks on ice, like, that sort of thing. And, like, that's kind of been my impression with Draymond since the beginning of the season, where he said his wind isn't where he wants it to be. And that's kind of the player Draymond is. Like, Draymond's not I don't need to be in shape, I can just ISO and cook you in the post type of player. He needs his full athleticism. Like, I mean, honestly, like, imagine if Steph was 10% less effective in terms of moving off the ball and just his cardiovascular fitness, he'd be a lot less effective. So, to Ricky's point, like, it is concerning, but, like, I don't even know how to attack that, because COVID's generally a new disease and we don't really know what the long-term effects are. Like, I don't know if this is one of those things where, like, in April it will be better, or, you know, it needs to be a long-term concern.
Yeah, I mean, you said it. I think you got it right there. I think the only thing is, like, nobody knows what this does to people unless you've had it. And the people that have had it, it does different things to different people. So I think the only thing we can do is you say, like, you believe whatever Dre is saying. Wiseman also, like, you just believe what they're saying and how they feel. So whenever Dre feels like he's 100%, then that's what we hold him to. But until then, yeah, I mean, we like, it's a pandemic and this is new territory for everybody. We don't know what it is.
Absolutely. Keep moving. Drew, what's going on?
Yeah, what's up? I think, you know, in response to you asked the question, was this sort of fuck you game from Draymond, or was this, you know, just him happening to play better? You know, I think, honestly, Mav Carter called him up, was like, hey, Dre, you got to start playing better, man. They're comparing you to Tim Tebow out here. You know what I'm saying?
So you think the light years locker room comparing him to Tim Tebow is why he threw 19 assists today?
That got to the clutch mafia?
Well, I think it's why he scored double digit points. I think it is.
Ooh, I like that. Yeah,
I think because, and it, I mean,
I'm willing to take the victory lap.
Yeah. No, but I do think with Borrego and Kerr, they have more in common than I realize maybe. Because they both play players that shouldn't be playing. Like Bisnack Biyombo, I don't even know why he's still in the league, but he was getting run. And Kerr with Wanamaker, it's like the same thing.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. And so let's get to the broad point. So why do you think Draymond's playing better right now? You really think it's you think it's a push from the agency side? That's what we're getting here?
I mean, I do think he was hearing it. I don't know if it was from the agency side, but I think he was probably a little embarrassed about how the other Charlotte game ended. And he knows. I think he kind of preserves his body during the regular season and then turns up for the playoffs a lot. So he kind of realized, like, all right, it's gotten to a point now where I'm shooting 30% from the field. I need to at least show people I'm still capable of playing like I did in 2019. You know what I'm saying?
I 100% agree with you. Draymond is a guy who needs some sort of stakes. And anytime anyone doubts him. So, like, the Charlotte's a perfect example. Last Saturday, he cost the team the game. There's no other way around it. And so, like, for him, this is, like, an opportunity to be like, hey, guys, you know, I may have cost you that one, but let's not forget who I am type of game from him. And I think that's the interesting thing with Draymond, because, like, he can turn up to a level that, quite frankly, very few players in the NBA are capable of getting to. Like, he is that smart. He is that multifaceted. Even when his shot's not falling, he's still pretty damn effective. But it's hard to engage him to get to that level. And, yeah, I mean, it's just part of the dichotomy of Draymond. Like, I don't know how many other players you could describe that way. Like, most players, if they're good, they're good. Draymond can oscillate between should he be an NBA player to is he one of the 10 best players in the NBA. Like, not a lot of players have that sort of range.
Yeah, for sure. And I did have one more question real quick.
What's up?
Quinn Cook and Glenn Robinson got waived, I think. Which of those two players, if you had a choice, would you prefer to end up on the Warriors?
Aaron, take it.
I mean, neither is the answer, but for as much as everybody loves, and this is true, everybody loves Quinn Cook, all the Warriors guys love him. He was great in the locker room with the Lakers. Glenn, GR3 is a better NBA basketball player and has more usefulness because of his size on the wing. Although at this point, I think I'd rather have Quinn Cook playing backup point guard than Brad Wanamaker. So I guess maybe there's more room for Quinn Cook, but I mean, the answer is probably neither. I don't think there's room for either, to be honest.
Okay. So you don't think Glenn Robinson III helps? Cause he is at least a wing.
Yeah. I just,
I think Warrior fans fell in love with him last year because it was a terrible team and he was the best wing on a terrible team. But
yeah, and there's athletic articles about him buying furniture for random old ladies that don't know who he is that he lives in a building with. Yes. Yeah, I mean, I think he's better than Quinn Cook, but I don't know. You know, is he better than Damian Lee? Is he better than JTA? I don't know. There's like
who do you cut? Right.
Is he better than Smiley?
He is better than Smiley.
He's yeah, but that is not. I mean, that clearly hasn't been the calculus thus far.
True. All right, we can keep moving. Sergio.
Yo, what up? Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, Sergio, can hear you. What's up, man?
So, first of all, I want to show Wiseman some love, and then I'm going to ask you guys a roster question. So, Wiseman per 36 right now at 19 years old, putting up 21 points, 10 rebounds, 2 blocks on 52 from 2, and 43% from the 3. And then my question for like the roster next year, I guess, is would you be sad at this point to see Oubre in a different uniform next season, especially considering that getting someone of his value with cap restrictions is highly unlikely? And then who is your favorite candidate of the expiring contracts to return next year?
Well, I love that question. So
yeah, that's a good one.
To start with it, they have to keep Oubre if they don't trade him at the deadline. They're too far over the cap that there's just no one available at a veteran minimum with his skill set, quite frankly. Like, he makes more sense as a third wing. He does certain things. Like, he's a flawed player, but it is what it is. He's athletic. He plays defense. He's a good cutter. He can score the ball a little bit. I think if they don't trade him by March 25th, they have to do whatever they can to keep him, because if they lose him, what veteran minimums are, it's Kent Bazemore, who's been actually really good for them, to be honest, but like, you can't necessarily count on that from veteran minimum, and or Juan Toscano, but either way, you're not getting a player Kelly's caliber.
Yeah, I mean, that's 100% correct. Either you trade Oubre now, or now, whenever the deadline is.
Next 3 weeks. Yeah.
March 25th or something. Either you trade him before the deadline or you keep him. Even if you don't love him as a player, just so you have the salary spot, because there's no mechanism to replace him. So I think he is and should be the most likely expiring contract to stay. Pretty simple.
Agreed.
And I think he fits. I think he fits like pretty well as a six man, especially defensively, for the stuff I mentioned earlier, how he can kind of be the wild man, and Wiggins and Clay can be more wing stoppers, kind of steady, and then you have somebody kind of coming in as a change of pace defensively. So yeah.
I mean, so we can debate, you know, what we should expect from Clay next year based off of his two injuries and, you know, the layoff, and, you know, those are real things. But,
if you look at the roster, obviously, you're bringing back Steph, you're bringing back Draymond. Now you have Clay, Wiggins, and hopefully Oubre on the wings. You're not in a bad position to where you would enter the offseason with your primary goal being, I just need to upgrade the playmaker role in the second unit. I need to get someone better than Brad Wanamaker. And all of a sudden, I don't know how good the roster is, but I do think it's semi-deep and it's interesting. It's enough that you want to see where it lands before you start making the wholesale changes, before you start considering, like, we need to trade Wiseman and picks and all this stuff to get a big time player. Like, it puts you in a conversation where you're at least have an interesting roster.
So, yeah, I mean, I think if everything goes as you hope, all those guys that you mentioned, and then you're looking for, with whatever exceptions, you're looking for a backup point guard again. And you're looking for another center, kind of a Marc Gasol, who's not been great for the Lakers, but kind of a Marc Gasol ring chasing center, just as another option.
Sure.
This coming, but then, I mean, the interesting thing is, if everything goes well, then you also have, you know, Kuminga or somebody with the fourth or fifth.
Jalen Green,
with the Minnesota pick, and maybe you can actually kind of thread the needle. Look, I agree. I've heard people on your podcast say this, and people other way, that like you're doing a disservice to Steph if you have both Wiseman and the Minnesota pick next year. And I don't think that's necessarily wrong, but if everything goes 100% how you hope it goes, you know, I think it's possible that the Warriors can thread that needle.
Yeah, it's like you're best case, you're the Spurs, where you thread the needle. Worst case, you're the Celtics, where everything looks good on paper, but it just never...
Where you have two All-Stars and you're 15 and 17?
Yeah, exactly. Or you know, you have these young players who look amazing with Kyrie and... Hayward and Horford, and the chemistry's off, and you know, it doesn't come together. But I think working from a position of having a bunch of players people want is ultimately always a better position to be in. So I don't know. Maybe they need to make the trade, but like if the trade isn't there, I'd rather roll with who the pick is and go with it. All right, we keep moving. Hey, Mar, what's up,
yo? Man? Yo, I'm here, man. Hey, so help me out here. I could have swore last year Kai Bowman played well enough to earn a roster spot this year. Guy gets waived, and here we are stuck watching Brad Wanamaker try to run a second unit. Like, if the Warriors have any actual desires to be competitive in the playoffs, they got to get something from the second unit. And I may be on the out when I say this. There's a reason why I was a big fan of them drafting LaMelo, if that was a possibility, because this situation that we're watching right now would be non-existent. Right? Now, obviously, you're going to say then, well, who are they getting at center? I don't know. Let Bob and front office figure that part out. But it's such a glaring hole. It's embarrassing to watch. I mean, we're stuck here watching Steve run this whole rotation to the second and have to watch Brad play 6 minutes of terrible basketball. Like, what is going on? I don't understand it at all.
So hold on. Let's be fair here, though. You're not wrong. And Wanamaker's terrible, right? You're not wrong. He's been terrible. He was terrible. The idea of it was terrible. If Sam was willing to release the footage, you can look at our text thread. I've been telling Sam Wanamaker is terrible for 6 months.
Yeah.
But it's not just that. Like, it's more institutional than that. When was the last time the Warriors had somebody that could dribble and initiate offense other than Seth? It's not a Wanamaker thing. It's not a Kerr thing. Why did he keep playing him? When was the last time the Warriors said, you know what? We need somebody to initiate offense and dribble without Steph Curry. It's been a blind spot for the front office for 10 years.
Yeah. I mean, I seen someone in the chat put it was Jarrett Jack. I mean, most recent memory, it was Jarrett Jack. And I think
it's, it is kind of since they got KD, they're like, all right, we don't need any ball handlers ever.
No, but he's no longer there either. Jarrett Jack and Leandro Barbosa, like, but they've had wings, right? Livingston and Iggy and Durant and even Draymond. They've had other guys to initiate offense, and they've done stuff from the high post with Bogut,
Zaza,
even David West. Like, they've done, but this has been a blind spot for the front office for as long as Steph has been here.
Yeah, I mean, and if you think about it, they can't get away with that no longer on this current roster the way it's constructed, because they don't have enough high IQ guys that can just make that read and react type play. You know, we're starting to see the offense finally gel, and it's nice to see, you know, guys like Oubre, you know, being in the right spots, making the right cuts. But like I said, if moving forward, not only just this season, but even just next season, like, they really absolutely need another playmaker outside of just Steph and Draymond. Like, that has to be a hole that they need to plug, and Bob has got to be on that.
I agree. I do agree. They need to figure out some playmaking. They need someone a little more creative.
Argument.
Yeah. Appreciate you, Mar.
Thanks, guys.
Saeed, what up, man?
My guys, what's up?
How you doing?
I'm good.
Look at that beard.
This is my take. We fall in love with our guys too much when they start playing good. We got to trade Oubre right now. It's the reality of how it's going to work. They're not going to, if they re-sign him, they re-sign him. Great. But we got him on a hot streak. Got to get us a good stud right now. That's what I'm saying.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just wondering, I'll ask Aaron this. What can you get for Kelly Oubre right now?
Well, I mean, that's right. That's what I was going to say. Sad, like, for who?
There's a bunch of dudes. We can go after Collins. We can go after Ball. We can go after all these guys that are disgruntled in their own teams right now.
Okay, so
how many first round picks are you willing to throw in for John Collins?
I'll give Minnesota's next year's pick when it lands in the top three.
Ooh, okay. Oh, you're getting spicy. Okay.
So you're going Oubre and the Minnesota pick for John Collins.
And give me back their young stud center that they just picked up this year.
Oh, Okongo?
Or do you want okay. I mean, look, John Collins is really good. He blocks shots. He can make a three. He's kind of a 4-5. Conceptually, I don't disagree with you about trading Oubre. I think it just takes two teams. It's going to take another team to want Oubre. Look, if the Pelicans wanted Oubre for Lonzo Ball, who has been playing really well basically since all of those trade rumors came about, yes, I would trade Oubre for Lonzo Ball in a second. But it takes a second team to want to do it. Now, do I want Jared Allen? Yes, sure. But it takes two different teams.
My other issue is once you draft James Wiseman, Big Jim, do you really want to commit?
We have to kill that with fire.
but do you really want to commit?
If they're going for young guys right now, these guys are not getting any younger. Draymond, Clay, and Steph, and Collins is an RFA. They can match any contract that anyone wants to sign. They want to go young. They got to go young. And Oubre is not the stud that everyone thinks he is.
I don't disagree with you, Sid. We appreciate you. We keep moving. I want to figure out who they can move him for. That's the bigger thing. The Warriors are in a decent position, but like, they don't have the greatest ability to make trades. When you consider half the players on the roster are
either veterans who have big contracts or young players who maybe haven't proven anything. So it's a lot of like, how many draft picks do you want to attach to Kelly Oubre?
Right. Yeah, right. I'm not against trading. I'm not against trading Kelly Oubre, but for whom?
Exactly. Jack, bringing it on. What's up, man?
Hey, guys. Thank you so much for having me on. So my question is sort of thinking about the future. And, I'm just going to, and when thinking about potentially the teams that we have to face next year, for example, the Nets with Kyrie, KD, and Harden, and our starting lineup as it is with Steph, Draymond, Clay, Wiggins, and Wiseman, do you think that, say they do get a backup playmaker, do you think that our team as would be constructed next year is good enough to beat the Nets? Because I don't think so. And, I wanted to know your take on what regard would we need to improve to the point that we could contend with the Nets? Would you think that we need another offensive fire piece like in the starting lineup, like a Bradley Beal? Is that the only way that we can think about the Nets? Because, I mean, hearing you guys speak like about Wiseman, all the potential that he has, he's 19 years old. We see that he's not going to figure it out next year. I mean, I don't think it takes like a genius to realize that he's going to be a few years away from, realizing his potential. And I'm just thinking, don't you worry a little bit that Steph is going to be turning 33, Clay's 31, and Draymond's going to be turning 31. Does the front office, are they aware that, this is sort of like an urgency period that if they potentially make the wrong move and choose to go young, it could literally be the end of Steph's and Clay's winning window for good? For like, it could be like the Spurs, it could work out, or worst case scenario, we'd be stuck in mediocrity for 10 years and we would have just wasted Steph's and Clay's prime. I don't want to become morbid, but that's literally what it seems like when people say, let's trust Wiseman, let's trust that potential. But it just seems he's too far away, and the Nets trio, they're not going anywhere. And like, if we can't set our standards to beat them and just be happy contending, I just think that's a huge disservice to our entire organization, which is all about winning, not about just getting to the Western Conference Finals and losing and being happy with that, right? I mean, so that's, I just wanted to get your take on that.
So I do agree with you. The goal should be, is this team good enough to win a title? As long as you have Steph Curry playing at this level, which is a title caliber level, the goal should be to try to maximize that. So I'm gonna cede this to Aaron, but we kind of, the Nets are hot right now, but we're forgetting about the Lakers, and they have to get through the Lakers first, which is, how do you feel about that Warriors roster against, a team with, I guess LeBron will be 37 next year, but age doesn't really matter. And Anthony Davis and, okay. So let's square it up. Let's say the Warriors run. Let's say the Warriors try to do the Spurs thing, where they go full strength in numbers, and they're trusting their culture to develop guys to have this. Like, I mean, I think it's a little foolish, but like chasing the 2014 Spurs model. Where does this Warriors team? How do you feel about this Warriors team entering next year if they do that?
I think it's largely about what Clay looks like. If Clay is 80%, the reason why I have some optimism for that is because I think that the slippage from Clay because of his two fairly catastrophic injuries, and I've talked to his dad about all of this, and he seems to be doing really, really well. So I think Warriors fans should be encouraged by that. But I think whatever slippage there may be for Clay is going to be defensively. So I think if you take this roster and you put 85% Clay back on this roster,
right?
I think there is reason to believe that it is a championship contender. I have said for a long time that I think, and this is, to Jack's question specifically about the Nets, I think the Warriors need more firepower, and I think the Warriors are better optimized when they put offense around Steph and try to find offense for Steph. But I think it's fair with this roster and then adding Clay to say that this is a championship roster. It's a championship contending roster. Whether that's the Clippers, whether that's the Lakers, whether that's the Jazz, whether that's the Nets, whether that's the 76ers, I think the Bucks, I think the Warriors next year, if Clay is 80% of himself and is like 95% of himself on offense and 70% of himself on defense, I think that is, I think with some moves around the margin, I think it's fair to hope for that. Now, I think the then question becomes, do you trade either Wiseman or the Minnesota theoretical pick for somebody that can help you now? And if that happens, then I think the Warriors are absolutely a championship contender next year.
Agreed. Agreed. All right, move it. Last caller of the night, the legend, Nana. What's up?
What's up, guys?
Hey. How you doing?
I'm kind of mad at you guys that y'all just allowed that take to go through about about trading our pick if we get it, and trading Oubre for Collins, who's gonna want a max by the end of the year that we can't afford. So I don't understand how that would even work.
That wasn't my take. I was just entertaining the take. But all right,
you
keep going.
Entertain that. You should have just cut that mic off, throw him out.
I'm trying to
pull it out of hand.
Out of hand, yeah. You just don't. Like, no, like, it doesn't make sense. Like, you're asking for a ball handler. You're asking for another shooter around Steph, somebody who could take some of the pressure off. And then you say John Collins and then trying to max him. How are you going to max him? You have to get rid of Andrew Wiggins.
You don't like John Collins' game, though?
No, I do like his game. But what you're asking for and what you're going to have to do to get him on the team is going to be crazy, because you're going to have to get rid of Wiggins. You can't afford a John Collins on the team. But what you can afford is, if you get a fourth overall pick, he's going to be on a rookie contract for like 4 or 5 years. You get Oubre for a very good deal this offseason. And now you get Clay back, and now suddenly you get some of the small pieces on the second unit. And suddenly, who's going to stop this team? Like, they're really good. Like, you see how they are right now. If you add just the two games that they should have won, we could easily have been 20-13 right now to start the season with like the second hardest schedule. So I think a lot of people are just panicking for too soon. Like, you can't just panic and make a panic move.
All right, so Nana, let me ask you this. You think, let's add Klay Thompson to this team next year.
Okay.
You feel like they're in good position to compete for a title?
No. To compete, yeah. But to win, like, you can't, I'm not going to be too confident.
So what else they need?
Because I feel like we're all getting at the same point. Like, they're good, but like, none of us are content with, you know, kind of a QT second round team. We're all aiming for a title.
Yeah. What I'm not content with is, I'm trying to see Wiseman play more minutes so I can see how good he can really be. All the other rookies, you know, like top five, top six, are getting starters minutes. And we're judging Wiseman off of like 16, 17 minutes a game. And a lot of that with the second unit. So I'm not really sure how great he could be without him playing with Steph more minutes, him playing with Draymond and Steph a lot more minutes, him trying to catch the ball better, him just improving his game, because I don't think he's been allowed to improve on his game. As he was getting better, he got injured. And then now he's back, like, after a long injury, and people are already, like, judging him. And, like, even today's game, like, you guys said he had a bad game. I thought he was fine for the most part of today's game. He's pretty good. I mean, like, 60 minutes.
Hold on. Bad second quarter. Not bad game.
I thought he was better than Melo.
You had a few people up here saying Melo was better, or he was he wasn't good today. I'm like, what do you mean bad game? Like, if his bad game is the standard you're putting on Wiseman, is 7-10, 16 points in 16 minutes, I mean, that's a crazy bad game for a rookie.
Aaron, you can get after it. That's on me. I said he had a bad second quarter. I didn't say he had a terrible game. But
yeah.
I think Wiseman, I agree with you. I think Wiseman was better than, I think he, I, Frank, look, I just think he was, be- so w- the way we look at basketball is often because Melo was creating most of his own opportunities. that mm-hmm. is amazing to us. But I think Wiseman on balance was better than Melo. Melo was getting attacked over and over and over and over on defense.
I agree with you. If you watch this game today, really good. Yeah. I know you guys brought up the MVP. Draymond was definitely the MVP of the game. But honestly, if you watch the game, you can see what was going on the whole time. And it was because, first of all, I've never seen Kelly or these guys cut to the basket as much as they did today. That was amazing. Like, that reminded me of, like, 2016 Golden State. Like, oh, I mean, 2015, 2016, all that cutting into the lane. And you just see, like, Steph just kept taking three or four people with him around the damn three-point line. And Green was just pump faking that way and always going into the inside. It was just cutting, cutting, cutting. So Steph's gravity was so evident today.
Like, yeah, you're absolutely right.
Evident has been all year long.
So people usually think that gravity is only about you as a shooter. But, you know, we all hate when Steph sets back picks for people. However, when he does, that brings two guys with him. Or when he's running around, it brings two guys with him. And Kelly Oubre had six dunks in the first quarter, and it's because of that. So,
yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And these guys played well. I know a lot of people also are judging Wiggins because his offense hasn't been good. He should be driving the ball way more. I mean, he's not being as aggressive as he should. Get a little bit of Kelly's confidence. It would be nice. But he's doing a lot of work on the defensive side. Like, it's exhausting playing the kind of defense Wiggins is playing. And I believe right now, in this current moment, his defense is way more important to us than his offense. And that's why we're getting wins. So, not ready to complain on the Wiggins side yet. And Minnesota fans would actually be not saying this is the Wiggins we got rid of, because if you guys seen Wiggins in Minnesota, the guy not only was a bad defender, was a liability on defense. You couldn't even keep him. Like, he would piss, like, you would have to bench him because he was that bad, a liability. With and Trae Young or those guys being a liability on defense is normal because they're tiny. But Andrew Wiggins being a liability at 6'8", it was just something you couldn't wrap your head around, because games were lost in Minnesota not because they didn't have enough offense. It was because they had no defense. So if Andrew had this defense he has in Minnesota, they were not trading that D'Lo for him. Believe me, or getting that, and we would not get that first round pick, whether you like it or not. Because we got him because of his liability on defense and his inability to be aggressive on offense.
And by the way, that's where we should give the Warriors credit, right? Like, they
absolutely.
I think this is where the Warriors are their best. Absolutely. Like, he's a player who is in a bad situation. He probably checked out on them. He was mm-hmm. clearly more talented than what he showed in Minnesota. And in Golden State, like, is he a max player? Probably not. But, like, he's been significantly better than kind of the guy who was, I don't want to say a punchline, but, like, kind of like the reputation he had there. So that's another case for where the Warriors have done really well. They're really good at finding these guys, or not even finding, but
yeah,
putting guys who are in bad situations, who are talented, to succeed. Like, Kelly Oubre is actually probably another example of that, where he's bounced around the league. He's been fine. He hasn't really thrived anywhere either.
Yeah. And he's now young he's still, though.
Yeah, they're the same age, though. Him and Wiggins are pretty much the same age.
Yeah.
So,
well, you know, she's right. Andrew Wiggins was the single worst defensive player in the history of the NBA, statistically, until he came to the Warriors. So yeah, I mean, she's absolutely right.
I'll give Steve credit for that. But also, Steve today, I don't know why nobody criticized him for his crucial mistake. Oh, first, why does he play Pascal with Wiseman? I don't like that lineup. That's a disgusting lineup. That should never be a lineup where those two play together. And two, I don't know why he benched Wiseman early in the fourth quarter. Like, we had no offense after that.
So I think
till Steph and Green came back.
So this is an interesting thing, because I think that Pascal, his success has mostly been when he was playing, you know, due to necessity, he was playing small ball five. And what that meant was he had a quickness advantage and sometimes a strength advantage of against all these backup fives. And that he was killing these backup fives because he could just face up on them, take them against the dribble. However, if he is going to fit with the Warriors long term, it has to be at four because of Wiseman, because of Looney, because Draymond's going to play some minutes at five. So he has to play minutes. Like, if he can't play minutes at backup four, then he can't play. So,
and I don't blame Steve for experimenting with lineups to get him there, because like ultimately you're right, he's just a gimmick player if he's a small ball five at 6'6". So
yeah,
it's more important for him to figure out, like, even if it's frustrating to watch some of the matchups, like, it's worth exploring.
Yeah, and I think they need to go back. I don't know why JTA is not a full roster spot right now. He was essential to this team, and I believe they need to run that small ball five, especially to close out games. Like, if you need a quick run, that small ball is really amazing, and they play really good defense, and I believe teams will have a hard time trying to guard that small ball. So JTA got to be in the starting lineup again. Quickly run with it. Use him like an Andre Iguodala when Clay comes back. It would be a really good set.
I agree with you. All right, Nana, we're going to leave it here.
And by the way, I think it's pretty apparent that JTA is going to be he's going to get converted from a two-way once his days run out, once his games run out, and the Warriors are going to need him in the playoffs so he can play on the playoff roster. The Warriors are going to convert him to a real contract.
I agree with you. All right, we're leaving it there. JTA, real roster. Warriors back 3-0, finally. First three-game winning streak of the season. Appreciate all of you. Everyone, thanks for checking in, guys.